Oh, I followed the meeting to order, and the people that are here for 3809 can go home.
Oh, sure,
it's a great bill, but I'd have to rule it out of order because we got a fiscal note this morning. And so we're just going to not hear that one. And the first bill on the agenda is Representative Thiessen's 3134.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this bill was actually referred to the committee because there was concern that there was a fiscal note, but an amendment in the last committee actually took out that concern. And so it's really just a matter of, it was heard in the public, in the Commerce Committee, which kind of has jurisdiction over this stuff. So the only reason we're here is because there was supposedly a fiscal note. It does not exist, and so I'm just asking that it be re-referred back out so we can go to the floor.
Okay, I think there's someone that wants to comment on this bill. Representative Portman around. So I will. Representative Thiessen has moved that House File 3134 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. And Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the committee. I'm just having passed out a written testimony that was provided to me by one of my constituents with just a concern about this bill that I encouraged him to talk to the authors about, and will continue to talk to the authors as the bill moves forward, about whether this is just a codification of law or whether it is existing law. And my understanding from the State Bar Association and the authors is this bill is just a codification of existing law. And my constituent just wanted his voice to be heard that he disagreed on that. So I brought his letter for the members of the committee.
And Mr. Chair, on that issue, I think that there is, if this gets into the difference between torrens and abstract property, and I'm not going to profess to be an expert on that. The Bar Association, you know, I'm not sure if this is truly a clarification of law or it may be changing something substantively. I think that there's a question about that. We're working on it. The Bar Association actually discussed this and this specific issue in detail when they came forward with their proposal. Unfortunately, I don't see their representative here, so I can't tell you more about that. And what it comes down, I mean, the basic issue, as I understand it, is that with torrens property, the only changes that can be made are actually if you registered on paper at the courthouse, and abstract property kind of has different rules apply, and there's a concern that by doing this, there'll be something that can change possession that doesn't get registered at the courthouse. There's reasons for changing it, which I can't tell you what they are right now. So, but we'll continue to work on this as it goes towards the floor.
Okay. Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Thiessen, I think it would be good to have a little more explanation of what this does. I'm not a legal expert either, but before I can vote in favor of or against this, I'd like to know exactly what it's going to do.
Well, what I would say, Mr. Chair, is that there has been a discussion in a substitute committee where they actually deal with those issues, and those committees didn't seem to have any particular concerns about it. It's not a health care issue, and the reason it's here is because they thought there was a fiscal note on a whole separate section of the bill. So,
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Thiessen, is this the one I gave you that email about?
Yes.
That I didn't understand what it said either? and is that what you're trying to fix, or would you just look into?
That's what we're looking into to see if it actually is a change or not.
Thank you. I feel way better now. Thank you. And so keep working on this.
That is what it's about.
Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, that was my same question. I just was going to plead ignorance. I don't know what the bill does, and I was going to ask the same question. So I guess I would recommend then that we just move it on to since nobody seems to know what it's about.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, I know that for seniors and their heirs, this is really important stuff. And if it's just a recodification, that's one thing. If it's something else, and one question was like on 14.7, we have clearance for public assistance claims and liens, and it has counties to develop clearance certificates, and I don't know if that's a current process, but I do know counties, this is probably the area that counties most struggle in terms of implementing our MA law, and because the Bar Association is absolutely incredibly creative, and the county workers are just as bamboozled as we are by some of this stuff, and so if you haven't already, I think it would be good for you to consult with the Department of Human Services and a county attorney who deals with these things just to see what's current practice and whether this does change anything in their workload.
And Mr. Chair, that's separate from the issues. What you're raising is separate from the issues on a different section of the bill that Representative Abel and others. There we go.
Yeah.
We're safe. Thank you. There's a question on the Torrens issue, and then Representative Loeffler had a different question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, maybe I can answer the last question first. Relative to the... I'm sorry. For the purposes of... my name is Lloyd Grooms. I'm an attorney at Winthrop & Weinstein, and I am the lobbyist for the Minnesota State Bar Association. Thank you. With that said, in terms of the question, actually, this is a new procedure where you do provide the ability to transfer property on death, and it's using a device rather than having to force an individual or a family to go through probate. Your question as to medical assistance, actually the language that you see here was developed with the Department of Human Services, and they actually agree to the language that you see to, in fact, protect their recovery of medical assistance liens or to prevent any avoidance of medical assistance liens through this process.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up to that, Mr. Grooms. My question, though, is the workload is on the county and the county attorneys, and were they involved, and do they agree to the new process, and does this make their work easier or not? It's easy for state agencies sometimes to agree to things where the work goes elsewhere.
I know the county, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the county attorneys are part of the Bar Association. We did not speak directly with the County Attorneys Association. We can follow up with them. The bill did circulate the process in the Bar Association for a bill to actually become a part of the MSBA agenda. It actually moved through the relative sections of the bar, is presented to the full assembly, where the county attorneys do actually have a representative, and then as normal process introduced, and we continue to take comments. In fact, it's through those comments that we adjusted the language to accommodate the Department of Human Services. So I'd be more than happy to follow up with them more directly.
And Mr. Chair, there was an earlier question about the foreign, the practical location doctrine, and you worked through that at the Bar Association.
Maybe I'll just speak to it generally as opposed to the specific question. The specific question in terms of the Bar Association, again, yes, it was trying to reconcile Torrens property and abstract property. Abstract property is what most of you are familiar with. Torrens property actually involves a court proceeding in terms of locating, in terms of bringing liens on the property or affecting any kind of rights on the property. The Bar Association attempted with this language to actually bring comparability between the two. I won't tell you that there aren't some people who think that there actually should be a difference, but this was the general consensus of the real property section of the bar and those practitioners that this was a better and more consistent approach.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I almost got my questions answered, but I think the last thing that you said actually raised a question for me. And when you talk about the members of the bar in the real property section, it would give me more comfort to know that there are members there who practice on both sides of these things, not just on one side. Is that the case?
That is, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Mr. Groom.
In fact, the real property section is not simply made up of practitioners from one particular perspective. It's made up of real estate practitioners is made up of title members of the bar who represent title insurance companies, who represent lenders, who represent residential property, commercial property. So it is actually a fairly diverse group that actually is part of the section and their legislative committee, which first approves this before it goes through the rest of the legislative process.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize we're trying to get something that Representative Thiessen feels doesn't even really need to be here, but we've got three pages here in front of us that seem to raise a number of legal concerns about this. And I'm wondering if either of you, the testifier or Representative Thiessen, can just put in plain terms, what does this do? What's the intent of the change? Is it going to make it easier for people to do something they're not able to do now?
I'll take a shot at it and then maybe what you can.
Basically,
it deals with the doctrine of practical location. And what practical location is, it's kind of like adverse possession, if you're familiar with that, that if someone owns a property but you're using it for a long period of time, you ultimately can get ownership of it under certain circumstances. Practical location is a different doctrine, and it's typically where two property owners kind of agree to put up a fence here and have lived with this as being their boundary for a long time. That becomes the practical location of their boundary, even if what is written on the piece of the paper is different. And there's been a difference between Torrens property and abstract property. It's applied in the world of abstract property, and this doctrine has been applied. It has not been, by Minnesota courts, applied to Torrens property. And what this would do is would say that doctrine would apply to Torrens property. Is that about the gist of it?
That is the gist of it.
Okay.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But then Representative Thiessen or the testifier, these concerns about it being hidden and being hard to find in law and that people need to be informed in a different way, any responses to these concerns that were being...
Mr. Chair, I think it's not that it would be hidden in law. In fact, we put in the statute, I think it's hidden in this bill is the concern, as opposed to having a separate bill dealing with it. And so, obviously, it's not hidden any longer if it was hidden. And I think that there's probably disagreement on this issue. I mean, I think I don't know how to pronounce his name, Ricky, and it sounds like there may be some others who think that we shouldn't go down this path and we should keep the law as it is. And I think I obviously wasn't involved in the Bar Association discussions, but I think they did talk about this specific issue and came to the conclusion as practitioners that this is the easier way to go or the better way to go.
Representative Gottwald.
Just one more question. Does this create a new cause for action? Is that a concern with this at all?
I don't think so.
Mr. Groom.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do not think this causes a new cause of action. It basically provides a new, if you will, means of resolving a potential cause of action.
Other questions? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen renews his motion to recommend that House File 3134 be recommended passed and sent to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
not that it makes any difference, but if we could just pass it with no recommendation, that might be more honest about what we did here today, just so we're moving on. That doesn't matter.
I think that's really all I'm asking for, because
just move it away.
I think it has to be here.
Would you like to change your motion?
I'll change it. I think that's fair. Yes.
Okay, so the motion is to refer this bill to the Finance Committee without recommendation. Yeah. And don't come back. all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
Hit the road, yeah.
The next bill is House File 3615, Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the underlying bill was written in the hopes that we might be able to assist counties in dealing with the federal regulation cutbacks in funding for child protection, targeted case management for mental health services, and relocation services, which we had heard in the policy committee, has an impact of about $60 million just in child protection services, goes up to $100 million when you put the other impacts in combined. There's also concerns about cutbacks in the federal child support area as well. We had hoped at one point that Congress was going to put a freeze on the implementation of this, but they were not able to get that through, and the regulations went into effect on March 3rd of this year. And so this bill would ask the Department of Human Services to convene a work group to seek input information from the affected parties on the impact of these cutbacks and report back to us so that we can keep on top of this issue as it continues to evolve. And with that, I have Judith Brumfield from the Minnesota Social Services Association. But first, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Loeffler, you would first need to move your bill.
Mr. Chair, I will be honored to move House File 3615. And it's our understanding at this point it doesn't have a fiscal notice, just convening a work group with the work group members doing most of the work. And then I would like to move the adoption of the H3615A1 amendment.
Okay, Representative Loeffler moves that House File 3615 be passed and be recommended to the pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. And then Representative Loeffler, you move the A1 amendment?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any discussion on the A1 amendment?
Yeah.
Can we move the amendment?
What's the version amendment?
Okay. Representative Abel.
So the department said they'll do this for free?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Abler, some preliminary discussions on our fiscal staff was that these kind of work groups, they haven't in the past. We'll have to confer to get that confirmed because I learned yesterday that one part of the department can tell you one thing and another might have a different perspective. But that's in the past, they've been able to convene work groups and have most of the work done by the work group members, and that has worked out. So that's our vision here.
And Mr. Chairman, and I hope you're right, just that these little mystery fiscal notes land on you sometime on the floor or something, so I hope that they can do this good work. So I noticed your fiscal notes quite a bit lower than the original fiscal notes, from $30 million down to nothing, so that's pretty good.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the department here to answer that question of Representative Abler?
Anybody from the department here? Yep.
I'm Karen Russell with Minnesota Department of Human Services. I do not know if that would work group would convey a fiscal note on that. I'd have to ask our staff, fiscal staff. Can we get back to you on that?
Representative Anderson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, it'd be nice to have that information prior to this bill coming forward, but hopefully we can have it before it gets to the next committee. So,
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. I'm wondering, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but did you talk about who will actually be on the work group? And I guess my concern is, how do we know that if we have a work group, they won't have a predetermined goal to have a claim on state dollars? Because it kind of seems like that based on who is listed here that there might be a predetermined goal. So I'm wondering, how does the work group work? And how do we know that it's not going to be predetermined?
Representative Loeffler.
And Representative Pepin, this doesn't authorize any funding. What it does is bring a work group together to assess what the impact has been of these federal regulation changes and the cutbacks of the funding that they provide, and to issue a report to us on what the impact has been on the child protection system, on the mental health system for people with high mental cost health issues, for the changes that have been made in relocation benefits. So it's primarily for us to gain information on what the impacts of these federal cuts have been. We haven't been able to, in the budget, soften the blow, but we do want to understand what the impacts are out in the community. So it's bringing all the particular groups that are involved in these various services, which there's you know, $60 to $100 million of expected losses to bring forth the data and assemble it together so that we can actually understand and convey, you know, or respond to that as it comes back to us.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler. So who exactly then would be on? Would there be someone from each? Just if you could give me a little more detail as to who exactly, would there be someone from each of these, you know, somebody from the juvenile court staff, guardian ad litem, who exactly would be, just a little bit more detail about the actual work group would be helpful.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Representative Pepin, my experience has been in the past when you call it a work group, and you don't make it an official advisory council that has to go through, you know, certain kind of appointment process and things like that. You leave it to the discretion of the commissioner with some direction as to who they ought to invite, that you don't get down to there should be two of these or one of those, the kind of thing that we typically do when it's an official advisory council that's eligible for mileage reimbursements and per diems and all those sorts of things. And so partly because the federal regulations are still sort of evolving and the interpretation and guidance is still coming forward, some of this is, you know, we're actually sort of speculating on who is going to most see the impact on this. For example, I've had a guardian ad litem come to me and say that they're really worried that the, you know, child protection system is not going to be able to look out for some of the kids that they're involved with, and that they, you know, would like to be able to have some input into feedback in the system as they see it changing as a result of federal reduction.
Any other discussion of the amendment? We have to vote on that. Being none, all those in favor of the amendment, and what's the number? A1. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. So we've adopted the amendment A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might have Ms. Brumfield just very briefly just sort of summarize from the Social Services Association the impact that they're anticipating and what they're experiencing and how they're working with others to minimize the impact.
Could you say your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, I'm Judith Brumfield. I am the Assistant Community Services Director in Scott County, and I'm here today representing MACSA, AMC, and the MICA group as well, and these are representatives of counties. Just a very brief background. The counties have been concerned, as has the state, for several years since the Federal Deficit Reduction Act went into effect, at the loss of targeted case management and how that would impact services to the most vulnerable populations in the state. Core services for counties have to do with adults who are disabled, who are vulnerable adults, and particularly for children who are abused and neglected. And counties see this as core services. We also believe it should be a core service for the state. Currently, the counties are funding about 48% of all of the child welfare costs for the state of Minnesota. The federal government is funding about 36% and leaving the state with only funding about 16% of those costs. Now, with the cuts that have gone into effect effective March 1st of this year, the counties will be losing over $60 million in federal funding for the children who are vulnerable and are not going to be able to make up that amount of money. Counties obviously are funding the 48%. We currently fund on property tax. That property tax base is eroding, as you know, just as the revenue coming into the state has decreased over the projections for this past biennium. The same thing is happening to counties. As property value falls, then the property tax revenue falls. So the counties are not going to be able to make up this amount of money. We're very concerned about what this means for the most vulnerable children in the state of Minnesota, as well as what that means for the future of the state if we don't take care of these children. What we're hoping for in this bill is that the state, the counties, and all the constituencies who are involved in this can come together and talk about what those losses are, what we're going to do to make up the losses and how we're going to protect the children and the vulnerable adults within the state of Minnesota, be able to bring that back as a report to the legislature next year when hopefully we can consider who should be funding these programs and to what extent, as well as how to make sure that we don't have further erosion for these very vulnerable populations.
Okay, any further questions?
And I just commend the bill, and as I was reading this over the new delete all, it seems to me this is what I would think that DHS should be doing anyway, especially knowing the rules have changed and that there's shortfalls coming, and I hope that they can just take this on as a matter of their ordinary work, that they would have talked to some of these folks and report back with some suggestions, and so just kind of help argue that it should be free for one thing else, and the counties work together and back and forth. So good luck with all that.
Ms. Broomfield.
If I could address that. Yes, the department is very concerned. The department and the counties worked together about 2 years ago anticipating this issue, and at that time developed a report. We are currently working together just on how to weather this next year. The importance of this particular legislation, though, is to say to this body, to our legislature, that this is a concern that you need to be addressing as well, but that you need a consolidated report that comes from the department that includes all the constituencies.
Okay, any further questions, comments? Seeing none, Representative Loffler renews her motion that House File 3615 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee, and that's the House File 3615 as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. So that bill is passed out of this committee. Next on the agenda is House File 3380, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, first of all, I would like to move House File 3380 to be recommended to pass and to go to the General Register. And then...
we're going to have to go to Finance.
Well, Mr. Chair, there is no fiscal note, I think...
We're a division of the Finance Committee.
Okay.
It's the only place we can send it
okay.
to the Finance Committee.
Okay. Okay, well then, Finance.
I have an amendment to make sure you don't have a fiscal.
Right, and I was going to ask Mr. Chair if you wanted to move that first, because I'm happy to have that, and then we could discuss it with that amendment.
Okay, well, I would move the DE2 amendment, which in the Policy Committee we attached the legislative auditor's report on financing of public health programs to Representative Liebling's bill, and this is the same language that is in 3809, which just got about a $500,000 fiscal note. So if you support this amendment, you will make sure that the bill that remains does not have a fiscal note. Any discussion of that?
Mr. Chair? And Mr. Chair, before we actually vote on that, I would have an oral amendment to that DE2 amendment. I don't know if this would be the appropriate time to do it, but it would put it in the shape that I think we should be discussing the bill, and that would be to take out the single plan language. Would this be a good time to do that?
Well, why don't we... this is the why don't we act on the delete first, and then if you wish to do an oral amendment, do it at that time. So all those in favor of the DE2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nope.
So now we have the DE2 amendment, and Representative Liebling.
I would move an oral amendment, Mr. Chair, on line 3.24 of the DE2. I would strike the word, after the word services, strike the rest of the words up to the if. So it would read services if the, I'm on line 3.24 of the DE2 amendment. So I would strike the words on line 3.24, strike the words that requires county-based purchasing in a single plan basis contract. And then on the next line, line 3.25, strike the words single plan purchasing.
Now I'll repeat that, make sure I get it right. On line 3.24, strike the word or the phrase that requires county-based purchasing in a single plan basis contract. That would be stricken. And then on line 325, we would strike single plan purchasing.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So this wouldn't get the plan in the way that the author would like it, or the bill. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, could you explain your reason for that?
Certainly, Representative Anderson and Mr. Chair. There have been some discussions about this. One of the things that the bill does right now is to require a single plan in the rural counties that are included in this bill, and what this does is remove that, so that there would still be, so that the plans that are operating there now would be able to continue to operate under the bill. So it takes out that issue, which has been, I think, the main point of controversy in this bill.
Thank you.
Any further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we have people that wish to testify.
We do, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I would do is just, in the interest of time, I guess I would just explain the bill real briefly, and then maybe my potential testifiers might want to come down here, and then if there are any questions, they can help me answer them. Members, I don't know if all of you are familiar with this. Many of you are also on the Health and Human Services Policy Committee, so you've heard this bill, but I think all of us agree that we really are in great need of health care reform in this state, that costs are going up sharply, and that we have a lot of big issues, and that one of the things that really will assist us and that we pretty much all agree on is that we need care that is integrated and coordinated to help control costs. One of the things, members, that I really think we should be thinking in terms of is that we often hear the phrase that the states are the laboratories of the country. Well, I think that in a really big respect, we could think of the counties as being laboratories for the state. And a lot of good innovation has happened in counties, and we've had some bills this session about that, that we're hoping to give more opportunities to innovate to the counties and to experiment. And that's what this county-based purchasing does. It basically allows the county to have a health plan. It has no cost to the state, but what it does is it has the potential to save a lot of money and to give better health care to people who are on our public programs. This just relates to public programs. And therefore, also giving better health care, better coordination, and potentially better health. Olmstead would like to get involved in a county-based purchasing plan with some four rural counties and have a joint powers agreement. And I guess with that, we would take questions. With me is Paul Wilson, who's an Olmstead County Commissioner. And I don't know if Commissioner Wilson wanted to say.
I would just reinforce pretty much what our Representative Liebling has said, and just add, if you will, that the counties all involved in this have come forward with the dollars at this point, $4 million, to just basically initiate and get this going. So the commitment is there. We've worked together in partnerships in the past with our counties to the south and the rural counties, so we have a good relationship there, and we would like to move forward.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, with the amendments we've adopted, I'm not entirely clear what this does that is not already allowed to happen. There's nothing now in this document that I'm aware of that isn't already allowed. We've got the competition that exists today. The county can continue doing what it's doing today. With the changes that have been made, as I've digested them here, I'm just not clear what this bill now does that changes current condition. And Mr. Chair, I would also like Brian Osberg from DHS to provide some testimony as well, if we could.
He will be coming down later.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald. Well, one of the things it does is it has in it a section that if you look at page 3 at the top, it adds language about basically a default to the county-based plan when a person doesn't select the plan. The counties cannot advertise the way the other managed care plans can, is my understanding. And so when somebody, even in spite of the advertising, so on, if they don't choose a plan, that they would default to the county plan. They do have another option. I think it's every year.
They can choose, as would be expected.
Right. So they would go to the county plan. And the next year, if they didn't like the county plan, they have an option to choose a different plan. So that's new. There's also Section C, which is kind of near the bottom of page 3, which was actually added by Representative Huntley in his other amendment, that most of which is now gone, but that says the commissioner shall reopen all counties for competitive reprocurement every 5 years beginning 2011. So that's also new. And I think that's it. So, yeah, I think you're right that it's not anything very revolutionary here, Representative Gottwald.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, I appreciate what you've been trying to do here. Correct me if I'm wrong, this basically makes it an opt-out. If you're an individual signing up for coverage and you do not choose, you will be chosen and you will be put into the county plan, so it's an opt-out of the county plan. I mean, if you choose another plan, then you've made that option. If you don't choose, you're in the county plan. So it's an opt-out.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I've never thought of it that way, but, you know, I think that's probably right. But, you know, we have to remember, too, that the plans are advertising. So to the degree that you believe in the power of advertising, you know, they are told that, you know, they get a choice. So it's not as though they won't know they have a choice. They do know they have a choice. But yes, if they don't take the choice, they'll be in the county plan for a year.
Representative Gottwald.
So, Mr. Chair, members, if they know they have a choice, I don't know why we would need this language, frankly. We've had testimony already that these kinds of moving to the county-based plan could have some negative cost impacts, and making it opt out does favor the county over the other competition that we feel we need to make these programs work well. I don't have extreme opposition to this, but it does tend to favor the county in an opt out approach in a manner that as I mentioned, favors the county, doesn't favor the competition.
Well, we're going to have three people come down to testify that I think are opposed, that it was they were opposed before the amendment went on, but Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question about the crossed out stuff at the end. Did we ever get that report? And maybe that's for the department when they come down. If you don't, and I'll ask the department if they don't know.
Representative Peterson, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, the other testifier is Brian Osberg. Welcome back to the committee. Would you state your name for the tape?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Brian Osberg, Assistant Commissioner of Healthcare, DHS, and we contract with 10 managed care organizations for our populations that we serve. This is much improvement. We're not sure why we need the language at all in Clause B, because Steadfast was very successful in proposing to us a way to go about serving our clients in Olmsted County, and we accepted their proposal. So if they propose to compete in these other counties, I don't sure why we need this language. If they have a good proposal to us, then let that process take its course. As to the question of assignment, automatic assignment, we would rather have automatic assignment based on something else other than just being on county-based purchasing arrangement. We want to treat county-based purchasing arrangements like anyone else. That's the deal, by and large, we've had the last 5 years. They need to compete against the other health plans. If they're going to be in this business, they need to compete in this business. We probably should determine assignment based on performance, and that's what we'd like to do over time. We have not come up with a proposal as to how to base assignment. Right now, it's just rotated. If there's two plans, somebody does not pick a plan, we just rotate in terms of the assignment. Maybe it should be based on administrative costs or the performance over time. We'll propose something to you next year as to perhaps how we should do that. So we'd rather not put in law as to having people automatically assign the county-based purchasing arrangements at this point. And as to the issue of the report, Representative Thiessen, yes, we did submit that report, and we suggested that there should be choice in some cases for people with disabilities, and we went about doing that. In fact, we did select we call Special Needs Basic Care Program. We developed that program, and we made that program available into a number of different counties this past year.
Any questions for Mr. Osberg? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Osberg, I noticed that in the OLA report there were a number of recommendations. I think one of them might be addressed in the bill, Representative Liebling, and perhaps you could confirm that for me. One of them is the legislature should authorize DHS to periodically reconsider which plans will serve these counties. And my sense is that what that the language in here on line 3.28 and 3.29, is that what that accomplishes?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald, I think so, but actually that was from Representative Huntley's amendment, so he could probably confirm whether that was his intention there.
That was from the, I guess it was from the OLA report. I thought that was gone, but apparently it got left in here.
Mr. Chairman?
And so, yes, they would have to reopen all their contracts.
Mr. Brian, Chairman, no, not necessarily. This does not preclude the requirement that we have in terms of single plan offering. This does not go as far as what the OLA report is suggesting, is to revisit whether or not we should have competition, if you will, within the current county-based purchasing arrangements. I'm not suggesting we do that, but this does not go as far as the OLA recommendation.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed that the OLA also recommends that the legislature should require county-based plans to meet statutory reserve requirements without relying primarily on county taxing authority as a guarantee of revenues. And I know that was an issue when this came up in the past, too, and I don't see that reflected in the bill currently. Is that a concern from the DHS perspective?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, I would, we do not have a position on that issue. I would defer on that at this point. I think it's worth consideration, but we do not have a position on that question.
If I may,
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gottwald, Representative Huntley's bill is still, the sections that we took out today are still around in another bill. They're just traveling separately. And in fact, the folks who are supporting this are not opposed to any of that.
Thank you.
Representative Lauffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Osberg,
you know, this provides that there'll be competitive re-procurement every 5 years, and to my knowledge, DHS has never turned down any applicant to serve this population in any county. And I'm wondering if you might tell us a little bit about how you see this playing out, because having participated in the 7-county metro bidding process, that was a very labor-intensive process on the part of the counties and DHS, and honored, or at least at the beginning, honored the legislative direction for county partnership with DHS in that process. And I can't imagine that you could do that to all the counties of the state and still have that kind of customization at the local level and addressing of identified problems if you were to do the entire state at one time. Could you talk a little bit more about how you envision that, and if you could also address whether or not you've ever rejected any bid when you've done expansions and or rebidding of PMAP?
Mr. Osborne. Chairman, members of Loeffler, we would not re-procure all at once. We would stage this, certainly, so we don't do this all at one time. That would not be possible for us to do. So we would re-procure over a 5-year period of time, and we would make that a staged process. As to whether or not we've turned down any health plan, I believe we have. I can defer to our staff as to that. But we have not, as I said, we have not turned down any county-based purchasing arrangements that has met the requirements of the law, and they have been successful in bringing forth a viable proposal. And I don't see why you need this language in Clause B, because if indeed, if they present a viable proposal to us, we would accept them.
We have one more person that wants to ask a question, but we have two more people who want to testify. But Representative Aber.
Well, thanks, and it's actually for Mr. Osberg, so
good.
I'll save my comments for later then. The list of, in the amendments, which I'm sure you've read, that's lines 319 and following to 327, it talks about MA and GMC, et cetera, and other prepaid health plans. What plans are not included in this that serve people? Is that a... Can you tell me that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, they would all... they're all included in this list. There's nothing that would be excluded.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, short. Okay. Let's hear from Jan Malcolm. Is she here? Oh. Is Jan here? Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Cheetah.
Mr. Chairman, we have a poor substitute for Jan Malcolm today. I want to thank, I'm John Cheetah from Curry Center, for the record. I'd like to thank Representative Liebling for her amendment. I think that goes a long way to alleviating my concerns and the concerns of choice that I have raised before. I do have to also raise an issue with the auto enrollment provision. Historically, the department has looked at random assignments, and that has been done not just in the state of Minnesota, but in many other states as well. Prior to my work at Courage Center, I worked as a research fellow at the National Rehabilitation Hospital Research Center, specifically researching disability and managed care. And as it relates to the disability population, we found across the country that random assignments was much more prevalent than auto assignment was in the late 1990s when I was there. I understand the concern about the numbers and risk pooling and wanting to have critical mass in order for a product to work financially. Actually, that was something that we heard from the health plan in Minnesota in the late 1990s when we were looking at mandatory managed care for the disability population. That was something we fought vehemently against, and we won that fight. So I think competition is a good thing. Informed choice is certainly also a good thing. And in working at Courage Center with a vulnerable population and one that is, by and large, a public program population, they don't open their mail. That's the reason this is a churning population. They're off medical assistance. They're back on medical assistance. So it is a problem getting good information into the hands of these folks to make an informed choice. And that is a challenge, so an ongoing challenge for the health plans, but certainly a challenge that I think should be shared by all bidders and all those interested in serving this population.
Questions for Mr. Cheetah? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chen. And Mr. Cheetah, the bill as it's written says in the absence of a specific managed care choice by the individual. So the individual retains that choice. The question is when they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, what should be the issue? And I can say I have heard from people who work in Hennepin County that one of their biggest issues is that people are randomly assigned, get assigned to health plans that don't have a clinic in their area or don't have, aren't the place where they've normally gone, or it's too far away, or they're referred to Eden Prairie and they live in Minneapolis for services. And so there's a lot of county staff time and effort and delay in care when you have to change people around. And in this particular situation where you're talking about county-based purchasing, which only happens, you know, in the more rural kind of areas, they're going to have those local providers in that network. So you're not going to run into that same issue that you run into in the larger counties where, you know, different clinics may not be in all plans and may not be in all networks. And so I think it's a little bit different situation. But first of all, you're giving the client choice, and I think that's where it ought to be. But for those who choose not to, who may just get health care as a side benefit to applying for economic assistance, which is the large majority of people under these programs, they're in a fiscal crisis. Maybe their spouse is left and isn't going to pay any support till it's court-ordered, or who knows what's going on in that particular household. They get this as sort of an add-on, and it's not the main focus of their life in crisis. And those tend to be the people who are automatically assigned. And I would welcome working with the department on a more logical way in which counties and others could help them make local choices that are based on their own preferences and a better knowledge of what's going on. I might pick some different criteria than what Mr. Osberg identified, because I think that there are other criteria by which people select providers. But I think this still honors that individual choice.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, I would be much more comfortable with that if folks weren't, for lack of a better word, stuck in a situation where they were unsatisfied with quality and needed to wait a year to disenroll and make another choice. And I believe in our prepaid plans that you have one movement for cause, and then you're stuck for a year, and the department can correct me if I'm wrong in that. So some of the movement we've seen with the disability population is not just voluntary enrollment, but disenrollment on a monthly basis, if that's something that they choose based on the quality of that plan or that service system. So.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment a little bit on that, too. And first of all, it was explained to me that the counties don't have the same opportunity to market as the private plans do. And maybe somebody could comment on that that might know more. But I think going back to Representative Gottwald's comment about this some few minutes ago, I think that right now they're not on an even playing field. And for that reason, I think it's fair to do this default language for the counties. But the other thing is that I think that having this may give the plans more incentive to market better and to target their marketing to this population. So, you know, frankly, I think it could have that that consequence as well. So I think to say somehow that this, you know, takes away choice from people, I just don't see that at all. I think that's a bit of a straw man here.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps Mr. Osberg might want to address this as well if he wants to. But this issue of the inability to market, I mean, Mr. Osberg just said, you know, we're not opposed to these county plans, that we want them to compete like everyone else. But then you're telling us they already are restricted from competing in this basic way that, you know, programs compete, which is by marketing. So two questions. One is,
You know, if they're supposed to keep people like everybody else, how do they do that if they're restricted from advertising? But secondly, I assume there's some kind of information provision going on, and certainly at the point of that first choice. So it's not traditional kinds of marketing. I mean, what are they provided about the county plan, and at what points, and what, how does that work? Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess Mr. Osberg wants to
respond. Mr. Osberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Buns. The health plans that we offer cannot advertise or market, any of them cannot advertise or market directly to our clients. It's a federal restriction in doing that. Now, Blue Cross and UCare and others may market in general, so they may have more identity, market identity, but none of them are permitted to market directly. Now, they're all required to provide information to our clients so they can make a choice. In fact, sometimes a lot of information, maybe too much information, and the counties can probably testify to that, but because they're responsible for getting that information out to the clients so they can make a good choice about which plan, but none of the organizations can market directly to our clients.
Representative
Bunn. Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a little follow-up then. So in this instance, if this were to pass and they form this county-based program, when they provide that information on the variety of plans, they would also provide information on their plan? I mean, so it would be on an equal footing at that point?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, certainly they will be able to do that. We also may have, on the assignment issue, I was reminded by staff that we probably, as usual, had to get federal approval of something like that because they require what's called equitable distribution of people who don't select. So who knows what that may mean. So we may have to get federal approval if you do enact that piece. Again, we believe that there's a better way of going about this than simply defaulting to the county-based purchasing plan.
Representative Gottwald, and then we're going to hear the last testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Bunn asked my question, and I think, again, the point is there is a level playing field here. The counties are not at a disadvantage in terms of information.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Wilson wanted to just make a comment on that last.
Very briefly, I know that, first of all,
state your name for the state.
Paul Wilson, Olmsted County Commissioner and President of AMC, so thank you for allowing me to make just a couple final comments here. The issue of competition is significant in that we can't visibly do anything, although it's been alluded to, the health plan certainly can, you know, advertise for other populations. However, we don't have that option because we're not in there. I would ask you just to take a second look and maybe look outside the box a little bit. This is the first time, perhaps, that there is an urban-rural coalition looking at this issue and how to deal with it in their counties. An issue has been brought up and it has been talked about is the track record issue. I would just like to point out a couple examples from Olmsted County on how we have worked, quote-unquote, in case management areas. One of them is with the targeted case management and child welfare. We have a 0% recidivism rate compared to 14% in 2000 before targeted case management. Our 30th community treatment team reduced psychiatric hospitalization days 55% over the past 2 years. Yes, we do have a track record. We know how to serve these folks. We know them. And we can make it work in our county. Thank you.
Okay, let's hear from Ms. Bruner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Liebling, my name is Julie Bruner. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. The amendment, I also want to thank Representative Liebling for the amendment withdrawing the sole source because most of my testimony I don't need it anymore, and you'll be glad to hear that. Two issues I wanted to just address. One is I wanted to reiterate the fact that the health plans can't advertise. It's against federal law to advertise to public program enrollees. And I have been working with, the council has been working with a group from the Social Services Association for the last year on a whole number of issues, not specifically related to county-based purchasing, but one of the things that we've talked about on a number of times, on a number of occasions, is the problem that this is a legitimate problem that the counties experience, and that they are obliged to mail out all of the advertising, all of the enrollment information from the county directly to the PMAP enrollees in order to avoid having the plans do the advertising. So I think it's a huge expense for the county. So we've actually been talking to the department about whether or not maybe we could do some of this electronically, or could we shrink it to a single page and people could send in a postcard and ask for more information. So, I mean, I think that that's a legitimate issue from the perspective of the county, but it does sort of reiterate my point, which is the plans cannot contact these individuals directly. I also want to express the same concerns we have about the auto enrollment. We think that there really needs to be sort of a random assignment in the way that the department does it right now. And I would also be concerned that it was done in a way that didn't compromise either the county-based purchasing organization or any of the plans who had a contract with the state for that particular county or county-based region. So those are my comments, Mr. Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, they're random, and in our rural areas, I know once in a while they end up going 60 miles. How do you kind of work with that if they're random? I know we had, how do we do local?
Mr. Chair and Representative Otremba, I'm probably not as well able to answer that question as maybe someone from one of the counties who's actually providing services, if that would be okay. I know that Peter Wooster from UCARE is here, probably could give you a good answer to that question.
State your name for
them. I'm Gita Worcester, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs and Marketing at UCARE, but I didn't hear the question fully, so if you could repeat it, please.
Mr. Chair, how does that work? In the rural areas, you might have 35, 60 miles. That's what I would like to know.
To my understanding, and I'll look to Brian Osberg if I'm not saying it exactly right, when individuals receive their application, there is a random assignment as a backup if people do not pick. So the person gets this application, they get the listing called a pick or provider directory, and they pick which health plan based on the services and providers in there. So it doesn't have a difference if you're 60 miles or 20 miles or 10, because you're going to have your local provider listed in one of the health plan directories that you'd receive. So the selection can be made by the individual looking at the directory, finding their local provider. They wouldn't obviously pick a plan if they didn't have their provider in the directory. Is that answering the question?
Sure. Well, in some cases, the providers might not be the ones that are available.
Ms. Wooster.
I'm going back a little bit to Representative Woffler's questions about the assignment. When I first started in managed care, and it was when this was a demonstration project, 96% of the people had some kind of education and picked a plan. I don't know what the percentage is now of selection. So I think it depends. If someone did not select and was assigned, they do have that one option that John Cheetah referenced to switch plans in the first year if they made a mistake. So there is a soft landing for them if there was an error made in the selection.
Representative Peace.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One is, and maybe someone asked this and I wasn't paying attention, how many people don't pick a plan? Do we have a percentage of a number on that? I mean, is this a big issue or is it a small issue? And the second question would be, in these rural counties where this county-based purchasing is, if you're either a private health plan or a county-based health plan, the number, like, for UCARE, for instance, when you're, do you have most of the providers in that county in your plan? So it wouldn't be an issue of provider choice?
If you just take the region that we're talking about now, the plans that are operating have most of the providers in the community, so it wouldn't be an issue there. I don't know that I could state that in every single county in the state, but the area that's proposed in Steadfast, the answer is yes.
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, just as I'm looking at the bill in its current form, I am wondering, in light of the changes that have been made, the amendments, whether on line 3.6, whether on line 3.6, the words sole source or single plan are appropriate anymore, since we've removed them from other parts of the bill. Just kind of a technical question, maybe to the author, Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, yeah, I don't know if that's something that would just be automatically changed, or I certainly wouldn't have a problem fixing that.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that's something that would be automatically changed. So, you know, if the committee's will, the committee should probably, you know, make some motion.
Representatives.
Thank you. Not to that point. I didn't get the answer to my first question. So if we could make sure that we come back to that. And they are talking about single plan purchasing in an earlier paragraph that we're not changing here, so I don't know if it makes sense to change it in the title.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, in terms of the number of people who do not pick a plan or assigned, our staff thinks around 30%. We can confirm that with you, but we think it's a minority, but still a significant number of people.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Representative Haas.
Representative Liebling, does Steadfast currently operate?
Mr. Chair and Representative Posh, not right now, but it is they're planning to get it started relatively soon. And
the governing board has been set up and the administration.
The governing board has been set up and the administration is in place.
Representative Posh.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, you know, I think this is a good debate to have today, because I think when we talk about auto enrollment, we need to have a broader debate of how we're going to do that into the future. I have some reservations when we're auto-enrolling individuals into a plan that hasn't even been operating, and we don't know what the results are. And to say, well, you know, this might encourage more effective marketing by the other plans, I see that as the potential for increasing administrative costs within the system in some ways. So I have some concerns with that. County-based purchasing, I think, is a good model, but we also know that there are some concerns that came with the legislative auditor's report. And I think this committee and this body needs to have more of a discussion on, for those who don't automatically enroll in a particular plan, then what do we do with them? The current process of random assignments, I think is where we need to go at this point, but also make sure that we have this discussion into the future.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Osgood, somebody from the department, do we know the total number of people involved? You said 30% of the people don't pick a plan. How many what larger number are we talking about as far as those who are qualified for this?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, in terms of the state, we have over 400,000 clients who are enrolled in managed care arrangements, and every year they have the opportunity to select, when they have an option, to select the plan of their choosing.
Thank you.
My understanding, in the counties that we're talking about, there are about 11,000 enrollees in the health
plan. Mr. Chairman, that's correct. About 11,000 enrollees, but this provision, I assume, applies to the entire state. I don't think it just applies to those five counties, right? The assignment provision applies to the entire state.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, the discussion here is that the way I read the language, it applies to the entire state, but frankly, I'm not interested in that. I'm really interested only in having it apply in this particular area. So, I mean, we could certainly, you know, I certainly would commit to amending that language before it would go further. Because, and also, I just wanted to respond to Representative Posh's comment as well. There's a bit of a chicken and egg problem here, Representative Posh, because in order to really get started and to try this, the county feel that they need the default language to get critical mass to make a go of it. So if you want to wait until it's established and you know exactly what you're getting, then you might prevent it from really happening and getting off the ground. And I want to kind of go back to the used language auto-enrollment. It's not auto-enrollment. Remember that everybody would get the opportunity to select, and it's only for those who fail to make a selection that would have 1 year in the county-based program. And from what I understood some of the discussion before, there might even be a chance to get out if you really don't like it for some reason. I'm not sure about that, but I thought I heard that today from some of the testifiers. So, I just wanted to kind of remind the committee that some of the legislation that we've discussed this session is some pretty big experiments, really. And this committee has voted on and passed some pretty big, what I would call jumping off some pretty big cliffs. What I'm asking you to do here is to really just step off a curve. So I understand there's a little bit, you know, a little bit of we don't exactly know how it all would play out, but we're in a situation with healthcare in this state where we need to take some little chances at least. You know, I'm not really in favor of taking huge chances that have an opportunity to upset the good things about our system, but I think that if we're not ready to make any kind of leap of experimentation, then I don't know where we can really go with healthcare in the state. I mean, we've got a big, major problem here, and this presents an opportunity to try a step. So I guess I would ask you to go along with me there.
Ms. Bruner, did you wish to comment?
Mr. Chair and members, I just wanted to make it clear that this is drafted to apply statewide, and while I appreciate Representative Liebling's willingness to amend it to just apply to Steadfast, we have the same objections there. With 11,000 enrollees, that's not an insignificant, I don't exactly know what term to use, auto-assignment or default assignment rate that should go on. So our concern about that would remain the same, even if it were amended.
Do you wish to offer an amendment to... I certainly can't support it if it's statewide.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're talking about 3.1, whether it applies to the entire state.
Yeah, I
certainly would be happy to amend that. I don't know that I can come up with language on the fly here that would do it. Maybe a staff can help me with that. But it's certainly not my intention that it applies to the entire state.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes. You've got to represent Gotwell.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer an oral amendment to delete on the DE2 lines 3.1 through 3.3.
Okay, it's been moved to delete lines 3.1, 3.2, and 3.3. Any discussion of that amendment? Representative Abler.
Well, I think actually if you're going to be who's not reading their mail, I would predict who it would be, and I treat them. And they don't read mail. The people that are going to, the most common person's going to default into a county thing is the people who ought to default into a county thing. They got a social worker, they got a case manager, they're already known very well by a first name basis by a third of the county employees, and they're going to get the support of this individual, and otherwise they're putting in some random group that they're not going to get the support from. So, I think it's good to leave it, and I think if you narrow it down or whatever, and the vote will go how it goes, but if we're trying to serve, it's all kind of the premise of county-based, is that without integrating the home visiting and all these services, that those people most likely will get the help. So I know we're short on time, so I'll stop.
Ms. Rooster, and please be brief.
I just wanted to confirm, when we've been talking about numbers here, Steadfast includes Olmsted County, and Olmsted numbers have to be added to the total when we're talking about the number of individuals that would be affected by random assignments or however this would be done. And we've been using numbers only that are the Winona, Houston, Fillmore, and Mauer in the discussions. And I just wanted to clarify, it's a much larger base of individuals that would come into this if we're talking all of Steadfast.
The total would be 21,000.
We're in agreement on that.
Okay. Any further discussion of the amendment, the Gottwald Amendment, Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would oppose that amendment, of course, and I think it pretty much guts the bill members. And I do have some, if you would vote down that amendment, I do have some, I've been offered some language here that would limit it just to the counties that I'm interested in.
Representative Gottwald.
No, Mr. Chair, very briefly, and members, this has been the crux of our discussion here. If this cuts the bill, it goes back to my original point. Why do we need the bill? We've heard testimony already from DHS and others that the counties are on the same level with the other plans, that this is, in fact, a default for about 30% of the people, and that an opt-out is probably not in the best interest of the structure we have in place currently. If this is, in fact, the core of the bill, then I think it argues against the bill. But this has been the area we've been disagreeing about for the last half hour, and I offer the amendment in a spirit of let's eliminate the cause of concern.
Any other discussion of the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Now, Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, I would offer an oral amendment to delete, let's see, I want to make sure I'm on the right version here. On 3.3, I would delete line, the current line 3.3, and instead insert the words Olmsted, comma, Winona, comma, Houston, comma, Fillmore, and Mauer counties.
Well, Representative Liebling moves to strike line 3.3 and replace it with Olmsted, Winona, Houston, and Mauer.
Fillmore
and Mauer counties, plural. Any discussion of that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that amendment is adopted. Any further discussion of the bill? Oh, yeah, we have one other one. Mr. Chun, would you tell us what my amendment is?
Sure. Mr. Chair, your amendment would be on after line 3.3, you'd add a head note saying effective date. And then you would add the following: this section is effective January 1, 2010, or upon federal approval, whichever is later.
I'm wondering about the date, Representative Liebling. I really, I don't care what the date is. Anything that's
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I was just asked a question. I'm not sure what we're doing here.
There's some question about federal approval for the automatic assignment, and so we'd have to get federal approval, and so the law should not go into effect until the feds say we can do that.
Well, Mr. Chair, that being the case, I don't know why we would put the date in there at all. Why don't we just say, you know, as a matter of operation of law, it wouldn't be effective until federal approval anyway, so I don't frankly know why we need it, but I don't know why we'd put a date in there in addition. That would just, it seems to me, make it difficult, you know, cause some difficulty if they're able to get rapid federal approval.
Read it again without the date.
Sure. It would read, this section is effective upon federal approval.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I certainly don't have any objection to that.
Okay. So I would make that motion. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that is added. Now, I think we're... Oh, Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair, I think that there's an issue with dates as well on Section 2. It has a sunset on the purchasing agreement through 2010, and yet on 3.29, it's beginning 2011, the rebidding. So I think that we want to change 2010 on line 3.15 into 11. So that it covers the period until they do the rebidding.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that as well. I don't have a problem with it.
And I would also suggest that under 3.28, where it says the commissioner shall, I would insert develop a plan to reopen companies for competitive procurement so that the commissioner would come back to us with a plan on how to do this, since we had heard from Mr. Osberg that they're not able to do all the counties starting in 2011. That would be a topic for us to discuss next year.
Yes.
Okay, and then to repeat it, it would be changing 2010 on line 3.15 to 2011, and on line 3.28, after shall, it should say develop a plan to.
Mr. Chair, can we do these separately?
Okay, so let's do the first one. Mr. Chun.
On the date issue, I was talking with department staff earlier, and I'd suggest saying until December 31st, 2010, so there's no confusion with the contract period. I think that would accomplish the same thing.
And so where is that?
That would be in line 3.14. So you'd delete January 1st and substitute December 31st, 2000.
And we're going to have to leave here very shortly. There's another committee coming in. So let's vote on line 3.14, where the date... you want to make that motion?
Yes, I would. Mr. Chair, move on 3.14 to change the language from January 1, 2010 to until December 31st, 2010.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that part of it is adopted. Now your other...
And my other amendment would be on line 3.28, after the word shall, insert develop a plan to. So it would read, the commissioner shall develop a plan to reopen, and I would delete all, and to reopen counties for competitive procurement every 5 years, beginning 2011. So that just allows the commissioner to come back with a plan and have it staggered.
Mm-hmm. Representative Thiessen.
No, I'm just getting a little bit uncomfortable with making so many changes here on the fly and not understanding what they all are. And so this piece I'd kind of like to think about a little more. I mean, we can vote on it, but that would just be my suggestion.
Okay, we're going to have to leave here shortly. Make it
very short. I guess I would object to the portion about deleting all. I think if we're going to keep this fair and across the board, this ought to be done in that manner. I think... picking and choosing is going to be a mistake.
We could, if you withdraw it, we could probably get to the bill, but otherwise we'll have to come back or this is
Mr.
Quiet.
Chairman, I'll withdraw that amendment and let the department and the author work on that.
Okay, so now we, I think, unless there's any other amendments, any further discussion of the bill? All those in favor signify. All those, yeah, Representative Liebling renews her motion that House File 3380 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
I think the motion prevailed.
Thank you, member.
And I have one final thing. Our intern, or Paige rather, James Mackey, is having a birthday today. And with that, the meeting is adjourned, and we don't have to come back at 6:00.